We're going to work through the agenda that's presented there and make sure we save 5 minutes at the end to agree what we need to deal with on the next call on the 27th of July. If we haven't completed the substantive items before then, we'll just cut off and transfer them to our next call. The reason that we're trying to get through as much as we can in this call is that the draft report will go over the weekend for review by legal counsel. So the more text we've got in a reasonably stable state to put through to that, the better. So we'll just start off with item number one, which is the community model, and that text is on the screen. That was drafted by Bernie and by Grace and has had some comments from Alan as well. I'd like to start just by asking Grace to do a brief introduction to the text there. I'd also like to note an error that happened in the circulation of these documents. The red line version of this paper that I circulated about 24 hours ago included some text on the voting weights and on the nature of the ICANN Community Assembly, the title proposed by the staff. But the PDF and clean versions didn't include that. So some of you may not have seen that content before I circulated it separately about 7 or so hours ago. So I apologize for that, but we'll do them in three chunks. We'll do this paper that's in front of us first, and then we'll look at the other paper that's got the voting weights in the community forum. So, Grace, would you like to just briefly present this in summary?
Actually, Jordan, I'm going to turn it over to Bernie. He's got the better summarizing skills here.
Okay. Bernie, go ahead.
Thank you. We had a read at the version from the previous public consultation, and we thought that this is going to be one of the key elements that people are going to want to understand, because this is where the powers are going to be exercised. And so we felt it was worth the effort of trying to create something that would be easy for someone who maybe hasn't been following this as much in depth as those of us who are in the middle of it to understand exactly what's going on. So the first strategy was try to adjust a version of the text that was fairly similar to what was presented in the last public consultation, and the thinking behind that is that it makes the translation job a lot simpler. After trying that for about half a day, we said, no, that's not going to work, so we'll give a try at taking another approach and just simplifying it with the notion of trying to make it understandable to the average person who comes at this a little bit colder or without a lot of experience about what we're doing. And we beat up on it and came up with these two parts, which we hope make it more understandable to the average person. We've tried to keep all the key elements that were there originally and had to be put in because of the developments since Paris. So that's my short intro to why we've ended up here, and we're suggesting this to the group.
Thanks, Bernie. Grace, do you have anything you want to add to that summary? Any particular points to point out?
No, that's all from our side.
Okay. From my point of view, I asked you guys to send this through and send it through on your behalf, because I thought it was a great first draft. The first person I'll call when we get to speaking is Alan, so you'll just follow me because he's written a few comments in the version that's in front of us, so I'll get him to talk to those. But I thought it did do a good job of describing the paper, the model. And it, like all of the rest of the content that's available at the end of the week, it will go to the lawyers for review over the weekend. So the aim of this discussion on the call, hopefully, is to agree that this text is ready for review by the whole CCWG tomorrow. It's not to give it a final sign-off. So with that, Alan, would you like to take the floor and just note the comments that you raised here and sort of explain them more? If you think they're self-explanatory, we can just have a general discussion. So go ahead.
Okay, thank you very much. This was done late last night, and I, as some of you may know, I was somewhat preoccupied with something else that is still keeping me busy. So it wasn't done with as much care as I might have wanted it to be. In any case, let's just scroll to the beginning and see what the changes are. Comments. The first bullet on page, there is no page numbers. First bullet in the second section on page 2, where it says, talking about the community model, saying it provides legal enforceability when the empowered designator does not. My recollection is that's incorrect. The designator provided enforceability on everything except budget and strategic plan veto. So just for accuracy, we should make sure that is that's correct.
I suspect it's a wording winkle there, because I think I expect what the staff meant by that is that it provides the extent of legal enforceability or the completeness of legal enforceability. Grace, Bernie, do you want to just respond to that? Is that
I don't think we need to give and take on it. Yes, I'm sure it just was not worded carefully, but as it is right now, it's a little bit misleading. So we don't want to be accused of pushing the model in one direction or another based on something which isn't accurate. So
no. Great. Okay.
The next one is just the a mention of the unincorporated. That the community model would use unincorporated association given this type. It just the language is not very clear, especially if you're not a native English speaker. So I'm suggesting some alternate words.
Okay. Carry on.
I'm trying to look at the beginning of the next page. It wasn't clear to me that which members participated and which didn't is a bylaw, is something that has to be included in the bylaws. Maybe I just didn't think it through clearly, but that wasn't a given to me. But if it is, then the wording is fine. If it's not, then we may want to revise it just slightly.
That's an important point, Alan. My impression was that we would need to state it there, and that if there was a new SORAC joining in a voting manner, then doing that would be a bylaws change. Or if not, that the bylaws would still provide a kind of formula for people's participation.
Yeah. I don't have any real objection. I was just thinking of it, you know, in a regular membership model, the list of members is not in the bylaws. You know, it's essentially, you know, pointed to in some ancillary document, and I was just thinking of it in the same way. But the wording here may well be correct. I was just pointing out that it was a new concept to me when I read it.
Okay, thanks. Okay. And Bernie is going to confirm, and Holly said that they can help with the legal on that. So yeah. Carry on, Alan.
The next couple of changes are not. I was just putting the text in there to show the language that is normally used in our current bylaws. It's always a greater than percentage, and as Bernie has indicated in another message, we have some work to do to decide what the thresholds are. So this may not be the appropriate language, but I just wanted to do a level set of if we can, we should try to use language which is similar to that already used within the bylaws. We don't want to be in a position where, you know, some things are 2/3, some things are greater than 60%, some things are at least, you know, are equal to 75%. So we should try to be consistent, that's all.
Yeah, it's a point well made, Alan, that we have to be consistent on that across the whole draft.
Yeah. Now, we may well find that if we use 75, we do not want to use greater than 75, because that would imply a single AC or SO could veto. So, you know, depending on the numbers, it may have to be equal to, but we just need to be clear. And if we can, we should use the standard language. Comment that at the last paragraph of the main text is talking about that we may have to go to an IRP or legal proceedings. Again, we're talking about an organization that doesn't have any money of its own. So if we think there is the potential for doing something like that, we're going to need provisions in the bylaws that ICANN funds these kind of things and that most preferably the money is held in escrow, you know, so that there's no dispute at the time about whether the money can be freed so we can actually take action against the organization. Not nearly as onerous as we were talking about before where there were, where there were many members, but still an issue.
I think that's a suggestion that we should leave flagged for the CCWG to discuss as a whole.
Of course.
It makes sense, but yeah, thank you for the suggestion.
And the last point really is talking about thresholds and stuff, and we'll be talking about those into more exhaustion later on.
Yeah. Okay. So there's a set of comments. Thank you there, Alan, for that. Aside from those comments and drafting improvements, though we've got a few things to improve and correct. Does anyone have any other sort of comments about this draft? So we'll do just a general speaking list. Robin, your hand is up, so please go ahead.
Hi, this is Robin. Can you hear me?
Yep. Yep.
Okay, so I have a question about the draft that had been circulated because it talks about the iCommunity Assembly and about SOs and ACs appointing people who would then cast the votes on behalf of the SOs and ACs. But I think that's different from what legal counsel presented to us in Paris, which was that the SOs and the ACs votes would be cast directly by the participants within those SOs and ACs. So I'm wondering, did this draft get... Did the draft go by legal counsel or?
No, it hasn't. And the one that you're talking about, the one that you're referring to, is the next paper that we're going to discuss. So if we can hold that topic until we get on the next sheet of paper. We did agree there that there wouldn't be a sort of a group of people doing the voting, that the votes would be mechanically passed by the decisions of the SOs and ACs, and that the community forum is more a place where the powers are debated and tested before the SOs and ACs go and make their decision. So you're right.
Okay, so I will hold off. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Robin. Alan, your hand is up.
Yeah, what Robin said reminded me of something that I think we have to be very careful that when we say SOs and ACs, we are talking two different constructs. The ALAC, for instance, is roughly comparable to the GNSO Council. At large is comparable to the GNSO itself. So we're to some extent mixing metaphors when we, when we're using the term SO, and we may want to consider using SO Council, which is the body that normally makes decisions or passes on decisions from the component parts, because saying the GNSO votes is really a message, is really a phrase that doesn't make a lot of sense in its own right. So although we've been using SOs all the way along in this process, technically it may not be the correct term. So just something to think about. I'm not quite sure what the right answer is, but I think we need to be aware of it. Thank you.
Yeah, Alan, whenever we're referring to a decision maker, we need to specify the right one. And we've said as a principle that each SO and AC should be able to subdivide its votes between its units if it wants to. So at this point, we don't know exactly whether it will be, for instance, the GNSO Council making calls for all of the votes, or whether it will be subunits within it.
It's more than that. If you look at the CCNSO, the CCNSO makes some decisions by a vote of the CCNSO Council and some decisions by a vote of the CCNSO members. And it's its choice, which it uses at any given moment.
Hmm.
But it's the council's choice.
Yeah. So we do need to get that specificity sorted out, right? James, your hand is up.
Hi, James Gavin. Very briefly, while I understand where Alan's coming from, I think we need to leave decisions of that nature to the DSOs or the ACs themselves as to what body they wish to use in order to convey the voting mechanism. I don't believe that it's for us here, neither as a work party nor as the CCWG, to decide that it must be the GNSO Council, or if the GNSO as a body wishes to push that down into our, you know, greater membership, then that's, I believe, something that we should be fully within our rights to do, and I don't believe that it's for either this work party or for the CCWG to dictate that.
No, I don't think anyone would suggest otherwise. I think it's just the point that we need to at least be clear that it is the councils of the SOs and ACs that will make the decision about where the allocation of votes lies. And once they've done so, the decision-making may lie with the council itself, or it may lie with some other subunits. There's just something we need to be clear about explaining that. Alan, you've got another hand up?
Yeah, just further on that. The point is well taken that we can't make the decision, but we need to make sure we are consistent with the bylaws as what is the decision-making part of that body. And it may be clear in the bylaws, it may be fuzzy, I'm not quite sure. But we just need to make sure that it's consistent. So it's a bit of research that has to be done. Thank you.
And that'll happen as part of the bylaws drafting process. Okay, so I'm not hearing screams of opposition. I think this is a good paper. I think the discussion we've had has helped clarify it. So with your permission, folks, I'd like for us to move on to the next bit of this text, which is the voting rights and community forum part of the paper. So I would bet that's about to appear on our screen. This one may have had a little bit less reading if you hadn't seen it yet. Is that going to appear on the screen for our staff?
Yep, just 1 minute, please.
Cool. So while it does, this bit sets out the basic allocation of votes between the SOs and ACs, so 5 votes per of the participating groups. And then it goes on to talk about the community forum notion, which staff have suggested could be called the ICANN Community Assembly. And as we've already discussed, I think that this draft text may represent that as a body to which people are appointed and make decisions. But I think the consensus that we came to in Paris was that wasn't quite the case, that in fact it would be an assembly where the community does discuss the use of any of the community powers before the decision-making bodies exercise their votes on them. So it introduces a discussion forum. It pulls things out of the SOAC silos and makes them discussed. And also, importantly, that forum would include all of ICANN's SOs and ACs. And so it would be a forum where the GAC advised the community on public policy implications of any decision it was considering, where the SSAC advised on security and stability issues, where the root servers folks advised on the impact on them. So this would be comprised of every SO and AC and presumably some board members as well. But for the start, again, Bernie or Grace, do you want to just run us through a quick intro of what's in this 3-page text?
Jordan, this is Grace. Bernie and I didn't have any writing onto this part of the text, so it may be someone else, possibly Alan.
Alan, go ahead.
I can't really speak to it because I haven't read it. I will note, however, that it starts off introducing the concept of five votes each, and that was already mentioned in the previous paper. So we want to make sure we're not introducing these two different times with the potential for slight two different slants to it. But I haven't really looked at this in any great detail, so I can't speak to it unless you want me to do review it very slowly.
Okay, well, I have read it briefly. I'm a bit confused by that, Grace, because I didn't write it. Alan didn't write it, and it came in the document from you guys. So
yeah.
we've got a mystery writer on our hands.
Yeah, actually, Jordan, I did lie. I did read it because I believe somewhere it says, I remember reading, and maybe I even remarked that it says the ICO, there are votes within the ICO, and that very clearly was not something that we decided wherever we were, Paris.
Yeah. We need to definitely need to clarify that language so that we're not misleading anyone. So that means that some of the bullet points on the second page of this document will need to change so that it clearly refers to decisions being made by the SNAC in their own decision-making boards. So we'll take the speaking of this period. Bernie, do you want to go ahead?
Yeah, we were looking at this. I think that was some leftover text that may have been in one of the versions we circulated. We didn't want to touch that until we finished cleaning up the voting, and you know we've been working on that part. So we'll be taking a crack at that, trying to integrate it into the same style as the previous text, but we just needed the information to be a little clearer on the stuff, so we can probably give it a try now. Thank you.
Okay, so it's a remnant draft that wasn't intended for circulation. Is that what you're saying?
Correct.
Okay, well, that makes considering it really easy. The answer is probably that we shouldn't. But we will. I'll just take Alan's hand at this point.
Thank you. The document has disappeared, but when we're doing this, I think we need to be clear that, and the I like the name, the ICANN Community Assembly, by the way. We need to be, it's got to be really presented in a different section from the voting mechanism to make it really clear it's different, and it needs to be explicit that all ACs and SOs can participate in the ICA, not just those who are empowered to vote. That was a really important thing that came out of the discussions in Paris. And
thanks.
All I have on that.
Thanks, Alan. And for what it's worth, I completely agree with you. I honestly don't think that we should keep discussing the text if we've been advised that no one is taking responsibility for it being a draft that's ready for us to discuss. But I think that we probably should talk about the voting weights. Can someone remind me, Bernie, have you circulated a paper on that? I'm a little bit behind on my email.
Well, we've circulated a paper for discussion among certain people to see if it made sense relative to that, but I don't think we've circulated it at large. It was sort of a test to make sure people were in agreement.
All right. Well, look, I think what we're going to have to do is hold the voting weights and community forum discussion until our next call, because we don't have consolidated text to look at, and we haven't got information that members of the working party have been able to consider. Is that a reasonable approach, people? Does anyone have an alternative to suggest? Bernie, is yours an old hand or a new one?
Old hand.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I thought that the text had been revised and was ready to go, but I think we've now understand that that isn't the case. And we'll need to do, hopefully, over the next 24 hours, we can get out for the working party to look at an updated text on the assembly, ICANN Community Assembly, and on the voting stuff for reading and considering over the weekend, and for legal to review separately over the weekend as well, and for us to discuss at our meeting on the 27th. While it is getting a tad late in the tooth, we don't have a choice about that process, I think. So thank you for the work that went into that drafting, people, and look out for some more reading to come. We'll move on to the next item, which is the fundamental bylaws paper. Now, I think I saw in my email that, Grace, you'd made a couple of changes to this paper. So if that's correct, and assuming it is correct, the nature of that change, I think, is that we've had these fundamental bylaws split over two sections. We've had a section that explained what they were, how they get established, and so on. And then later we've had a section in the community powers part of the report that was really brief, sort of three or four paragraphs, and simply set out that it was a community co-decision power to allow for any changes. But it doesn't seem all that sensible to have this discussion in two different places. It creates the risk of confusion. So we're kind of considering putting them all in one place, and I think that Grace circulated a paper to that effect, and I think, though I can't scroll, that that's what's on the screen in front of us now. So Grace, Brittany, do you want to speak to that first and just introduce what you've done with it, or should we work through the text?
Yeah, thanks, Jordan. So this was something that I worked on. Basically, you summarized it properly. We merged sections 3.2 and 5.4 into one large section 3. And really, all it meant was on page 4, which I'll show you in a minute, on page 3, it meant adding the community power into the fundamental bylaw section. So that's an additional 5 paragraphs to what the current section 3 looks like. And I guess at some point we have to look at how to make reference to the fundamental bylaws in the community power section without having to rehash the whole, you know, that part of the text. So if that's how we want to proceed, you would have all your fundamental bylaws in Section 3, including the community power, and then reference the community power in Section 5, where you describe the 4 other powers. So it's up for discussion with the group, but I thought it was worth offering an idea.
Thanks, Grace. To me, the way to we'll write a sort of introductory paragraph which uses the community power section anyway, because you'll remember in our previous report we had the community mechanism flowing on into the powers, but this time it's a likely decision, I think, on the structure basis that we're working on through drafting, that we'll keep them separate. So it highlights the powers and the mechanism are separate things. And we can just refer to this and that. So the cross-referencing thing isn't a problem. Grace, are there other changes to the substantive text here, or are they, or not? Was that the main shift that you've done?
No, that's the main shift. I made a few small proofreading changes, but no substantive changes other than moving the section in.
Okay. And the other thing that I should flag at this point is that I, as requested by the CCWG meeting, have approached the CWG for their comments on whether the separation process and the post-transition IANA governance should be included. And their discussion has been that it should. And I think, Grace, this is looking at the list at the top of page 2, at the top of page 3 of our paper. The Sibley lawyers and the CWG have proposed some language around there, and I think, Grace, if I'm right, you've already incorporated and summarized that in bullet points 5 and 6. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. That's, yeah. They were changes that you had removed, and I had put them back in based on the comments from Sharon at Sibley.
Okay. So, everyone, this text has been reasonably stable for a while. There is, once again, the you've seen track changes versions of it over the time. I'd ask for any kind of general comments on this. And, Steve, I see your hand is up, so please go ahead.
Thanks, Jordan. On page 3, where we discuss whether Article 18 goes into the fundamental bylaws, apologies if I missed this earlier, but the discussion there makes it seem as if this decision was reached because there's no current intention to move ICANN's headquarters. That's not what that whole section said. The analysis of bringing the affirmation into the bylaws on 8B looked at the Articles of Incorporation, and it looked at Article 18 and suggested that they already have the requirement. So the reasoning not to make it fundamental is nothing to do with what we think ICANN's intentions are. It's not fundamental because the public comments didn't support it. And I would definitely put in this section the very same text we used to describe what's in Article 18 and what's in the Articles of Incorporation. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. That's a good point. Would you mind if we created an action point for you to liaise with staff after this call just to make sure that that happens and that that appears as a tracked change in a refreshed version of this that gets circulated to the list? Thanks for agreeing that. Grace, Steve is referring to the two paragraphs after the list of things that will be fundamental, just above the heading for 3B.5 on page 3 of the PDF. So he's arguing that in the second of those paragraphs that the rationale isn't set out correctly. So if you two could liaise on that, that would be great. Thanks, Steve. Is that a new hand, Steve, or your previous one? Previous one, brilliant. I'm just trying to remember what it was that I was suggesting we were going to try and get out of this discussion. Aside from that change, are people happy for us to kind of consider this as stable text ready for CCWG? It has already been discussed, I think, on the main call. But I think we'll treat it that way unless there's any other kind of hands raised. Looking okay by me. And that also assumes that we're happy to have this in the bulk of this text in the one place. So we'll have a reference to this as the fifth power in the summary part of the powers section of the report, but we don't have the 4 or 5 paragraphs that are already there. So keep an eye out for a track change of that paragraph about the location. And otherwise, we will carry right on. Thanks, Steve and staff team on this one. The next item on our agenda is the standard bylaws. And I'm hoping Izumi-san is with us on the call. She is. And so Izumi circulated a revised copy of this paper along with several questions on the email list a while ago, and I recirculated a PDF copy of it and even a little while ago. So, Izumi, I'd ask you to take the floor and take us through this paper as briefly as you can.
So I haven't really made that many changes in terms of the criteria from the version 2, the last version. So I simply added some explanation about the reason why we want to we're keeping these dates short, and we can still receive the community feedback. So the additional explanation is that it's not the review period is not the only time that the community is able to provide feedback, but rather they should be able to provide comments through the regular public comment period, which is usually 40 days. So this may address some of the requests to extend the period from 2 weeks, I'd like to hear what people think about this, if this is like a sufficiently good enough reason to keep the period short, or do we still feel that we should accommodate the public comments and extend the period much longer than 2 weeks? So that's one point. And another point that I've added is more of a rationale to address that this power will not actually destabilize ICANN or stop ICANN proceeding from its activities smoothly. So just in addition to the rationale that is already there, which is that we actually make sure the supermajority of the community that actually wants to reject this power, but it also the maximum impact that it gives is that it simply, even if this power keeps on getting rejected without any limits, unlike the case of the budget and operational plans where we put the maximum limits, I think the only real impact here is the bylaws remain unchanged. So it's more like I've added more rationale to give more argument for the purpose that we have. And that's all the changes that I've made. And there are actually 3 points that I'd like to consult the group. The one is whether we're happy to keep the review period short. So the current options are 15 days or 30 days. We have to choose which one is comfortable, given that we have added some additional rationale that community has the chance to comment. The second is whether we are actually giving enough explanation about the stability of this, ensuring that this doesn't stabilize ICANN and it doesn't really stop ICANN from doing its job smoothly. So those are the 2 points. And then I haven't really added, reflected this comment, which I've requested to explain about the membership structure and how this will not create any costs, complexity, or liability, as I felt that it may be better explained in the comment section that explains about the single member model. So I'll stop here to see if any comments.
Thanks, Izumi. I think this is a good redraft, and I agree with the last point you've made that the cost complexity issue for the model as a whole should be dealt with in the sections about the model. I have got one suggestion, which is that in terms of the rationale you've added about the time period and the calendar window is useful. We need to have a consistent way of dealing with the time for a petition to trigger the use of any of these powers and then the time that's involved to make a decision after the petition. And in doing that, we also need to give time for the community assembly to have a discussion. So there are three time limits we need, if you like. We need to set out a period from when the board advises of its decision to pass a bylaws change to allow SOs or ACs to trigger a bylaw change veto. And then we need to allow a period of time for a discussion in the community assembly of that, and then a time frame for the SOs and ACs to make a decision. And it seems to me that it would be reasonable for each of those to be 2 weeks or 15 days if we're sticking with the days. Aside from that point, do you want to seek any more comments on what you've said so far, or do you want to present your questions?
I don't think I have anything else to add.
Okay, thanks, Izumi. No. Any other points, people? Any speaking list on this one? I don't see any. Hello, Izumi.
Hi. Well, I wasn't sure if I would have a chance to ask questions. And one of the questions that might not be relevant to just this power is that how do we define how we are going to trigger bringing ICANN to court? This is separate from each of the individual powers, that's understanding. So is this going to be defined separately in the section on the single member model? If any community member wants to bring ICANN to court, should there be any criteria being set on, like, if ICANN is not doesn't accept rejection despite this meeting this threshold, then it's only when the community brings ICANN to court? Or do we need to define something like this? This is my question.
Thanks, Izumi. I don't think that this is the place to deal with that question. Dealing with that is something that the community model as a whole will need to deal with somewhere in the bylaws, I think. Though, because it's the community mechanism as single member, there doesn't need to be anything stated in the bylaws that asserts the right of it to take ICANN to court to enforce the bylaws. Grace, do you want to offer a comment on this?
No, Jordan, I don't think I have a comment on this.
Okay. Are there any other... if anyone else has a comment on that question, do raise your hands. But at the moment, Tijani, your hand is up, so please go ahead.
Thank you, Jordan. as for when community member to bring ICANN to the court, I think this issue was discussed in Paris, and we asked the lawyers if it is possible. So they said it is. We asked if it is possible to prevent it, because we need the community as a whole to act on behalf of community, not a single member to do that. They said, yes, we can do that, and they will give us a provision in the bylaw that will prevent that to happen. So the process will be, if there is a problem, the community as a whole, the single member, will first go to the IRP. And if problems will continue, in this case, perhaps the sole member will have the right to go to the court. Thank you.
Thanks, Tiani. That is a helpful clarification, and you're right. One of the reasons the community mechanism, the single member model, was preferred was that it is the mechanism as a whole which would have the right to go to court to enforce the powers in the bylaws, not any individual SORAC. And so it's really a question of how, or if required, how the community mechanism and the single member would make that decision. But that's definitely not something we need to deal with in this agenda item. Folks, I just have a request, which is that in the chat there's a long discussion going on about something that we are not discussing on this call, which is the voting weights thing. As discussed at that point in the agenda, because we didn't have text presented to do so, we're not addressing that today. It is on the agenda for our Tuesday call. I will note that the sudden introduction of a proposal to change a set of voting weights that we've been discussing pretty stably for months at this point in our deliberations is quite problematic, but that's something that needs to be addressed not now, not on this call, not with this agenda item. So please, in the interest of getting through the stuff that we do have to get through today, can we hold that one for the next call? That would be super helpful. Thank you. So having dealt with the court action, are there any other kind of comments on this one? If there are not, my proposal would be that I work with Izumi over the next couple of days to just tweak, and this will happen for all the papers, to make common that petition, discussion, and then decision phase for the exercise of all of the powers. It may even be possible that we can just define that in the kind of header section of that, so the text might not end up in the same place. But just getting that clear and right would be important. If there are no hands going up to object to that process, then we will move on to the next agenda item, having hopefully noted that action for the standard bylaws to make sure that the petitioning threshold and period is included. The next item is the AOC reviews into the ICANN bylaws. In terms of text there, I believe there was some staff revision of the content going on. Steve, I'd like to hand over the call to you and Grace to just talk about where that's at and what we need to decide, if anything.
Certainly, Jordan. This is Steve Del Bianco. You can proceed pretty quickly through this document. There are only four or five items that we should look at. So you each have scroll control, I believe. And the first place to stop is at the top of page 2, where we describe the fact that we are not suggesting that review team recommendations must be implemented by the ICANN board. We acknowledge the fact that the board could decide not to implement based on feasibility, time, or cost, and then that decision is challengeable by us in the community. It's challengeable through an IRP, provided that we could suggest that it violated with some bylaws obligations, such as the bottom-up multi-stakeholder process. But we are not requiring them to implement everything, and the AOC did not either. Okay, so let me move there into the first chapeau. We updated it pursuant to the discussion in Paris to go with option 2 on review team composition. This is the bottom of page 2. And then we added the idea that the board designates one director as a member of the review team, and that's exactly the way it is in today's affirmation of commitments reviews. The board does get a seat on there. If you go to page 3, and I'll watch for hands to pop up, but Jordan, if you see them, please interrupt me. On page 3 is the item for which we need some help, and I spotted at least a few names of participants on this call who said they knew a little something about how to fashion strong non-disclosure provisions. And this is due to the fact that we are giving the review teams access to internal ICANN documents for the purpose of doing their reviews. It's particularly helpful for the ATRT. It might also be for the new GTLD program review. They'll want to see the documents that may have revealed the way that the evaluation process ran. We're likely to see that being important to the SSR team as well. So we have in yellow highlighting right there on page 3 is something we need some help from, well, I guess it would be attorneys, who are used to writing non-disclosure requirements. The non-disclosure part has to do with the review team members having visibility of confidential or proprietary information, and then they would have some obligations, perhaps even with sanctions, to prevent them from disclosing the specifics. I'm sure they would characterize what they learned in their review team report, but I don't think they would disclose. The other aspect to it is who and how would you determine what is subject to non-disclosure? ICANN may have a policy in place today on the type of sensitive personnel-based information, salary information, et cetera, that is subject to non-disclosure, but I confess to not having enough knowledge about that, and we're going to need some help. There's a
thanks.
Hand up from James Gannon.
Yep. Go ahead, James.
Hi, it's James. So on this point, I was one of the people in Paris who said that I have some background in working within confidential disclosure agreements and NDAs. I would make a suggestion, however. In the interests of time, we have a law firm, have a large amount of experience across a number of areas, as Holly's just said it in the chat here, and I would suggest that if we want expert and particular advice from a group of attorneys who have specific knowledge around our requirements and the way that ICANN works, that we may ask Diddley possibly to look into this, given the breadth of their practice, I'm sure they have some excellent specialists who could help out with this.
Thank you, James. Holly is indicating in the chat that she can assist as well. Jordan, as rapporteur, let me ask you about the latest possible time we could turn to this, since there's so much more work on our plate right now.
What can you just flesh that question out a bit more, Steve? Like, what do you mean by the latest time we can turn to this?
Do you think it's possible
to have something in the bylaws?
That's right. So, for instance, if legal does a review this weekend of all the other content, this may require more time than that because it has to be fleshed out as a requirement that would later turn into bylaws language. So I guess I would turn to Holly. Do you have the capacity to address this before
next? Before Holly replies, sorry, I think that we just need to be very clear in specifying what the issue is that we're trying to address. And the critical thing that we need, we don't need to design NDAs. We don't need to write those. Everyone, I think, is familiar with the NDA concept. The critical thing there is that last part of the sentence before the highlighted yellow bit, right? Although the designation of sensitive/confidential should not be in ICANN's sole discretion. That's the part that needs fleshing out into something that's workable. Is that right, Steve?
I think that's the essential question.
Yeah. So I think then that that's what you're asking for help in defining. And I think that, you know, a kind of one option is a dream team of you and Sam and Holly and whoever else being asked to do it. I would remind you, though, that if we're going to ask legal to help with any of this, we need to take it to the co-chairs and get them to certify the legal work with counsel. So, you know, I don't have a particular suggestion on how to go forward with that, but I'll take the speaking list that's there. So Alan and then Holly and then James. Alan, go ahead.
Thank you very much. I really don't think we need this that restriction. If indeed ICANN were to release anything to the review team subject to non-disclosure, then it is conceivable the review team would see something that they had signed a non-disclosure agreement of and look at it and say, huh, why is this being held private? And, you know, there are one can escalate in the review team up through ICANN management to question that kind of thing because they already know what the information is at this point. And the only question is, can they disclose it or not? And I think that's something that's manageable within the review team. The only question is there a higher level of confidentiality of things that ICANN won't even tell you about because simply revealing them to 20 people, some of whom may be in competitive situations with whatever the information is subject to, that they cannot release it at all. And it's that information I think we need to address, and I would say we want to address that by saying that if information cannot be released to the review team in general, it must be released under non-disclosure to the chair and or co-chairs of the review team or something like that. So, at that point, I don't think it's an issue of the judgment call anymore. The information is available to the review team, and if indeed they see something that really smells, they can take action of their own. We don't need to put it in the bylaws. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Holly.
I just wanted to say that we, of course, do these kinds of things all the time, and we'd be happy to help if we can. I wasn't clear on how much detail you needed at this point, other than to say that there would be an NDA.
The critical point is not whether there is an NDA or not. The critical point is whose discretion it is about what is designated sensitive or confidential.
Understood.
And believe me, I don't know the answer to this question, and I think Steve doesn't either, which is why he's asking the question.
But I mean, typically the information that you're talking about you know, we typically consider it as belonging to the corporation, so it's ultimately for the board and at their delegation to members of management to determine it. But it sounds like what you're wanting is to make sure that that decision isn't unduly broad in a way that would harm the ability to, you know, use information that shouldn't be considered so highly confidential. And the question is, do you want to use that?
Well, Holly, that's just triggered a thought for me, or maybe a constructive suggestion, Steve, is if the aim here is to prevent overly broad NDAing, right? And so would it be possible to say that there were going to be some standards prepared that apply to information disclosure to review teams, and that if ICANN didn't behave consistent with those standards, it would become a matter that was subject to the IRP? Would that be a way through this?
Jordan, since you asked me, I would suggest that's an awfully long process, an IRP, in the middle of a one-year review team to have to take a seven-month timeout to run an IRP. And it's not at all clear that the bylaws would provide clarity on transparency to let an IRP come up with a binding ruling. As I wrote in the text in front of you, and as Alan explained, there are two levels of disclosure. The first is ICANN disclosing to the team, and then ICANN may claim that they have discretion, that there are things they will not disclose to the team at all, and Alan suggested there ought to be an escalation process. I think that's a good idea, but I don't know how we need to describe that. Is that ombudsman? Is that a document access? And the second level that I wrote about was once something is disclosed to the team, if ICANN has it designated it as confidential or sensitive or proprietary, then there's an NDA on the part of the team that they can't talk about it out of school. They can't put it in writing in the review team recommendations.
Mm-hmm. So is there a problem that we need to solve in the wording of this bylaw proposal at this time?
I believe we probably do. We probably ought to describe the two-step disclosure concern more broadly. And if we're going to describe escalation, we should do so. And Sam in the chat is suggesting we have review team members signing up for liability for unauthorized disclosure, so we need to address that as well.
Okay. Let's take the speaking list as it's there. Holly, is that an alt hand? Yeah, thanks. James, go ahead.
Hi, James Gannon. So I apologize earlier. I was incorrect in my terminology as to what I believe we should be asking Sidley for assistance with. So there's two things at play here. There's the NDA, which is the physical document that a review team member would sign, but there is also the disclosure framework or the confidential disclosure framework that document would exist within. So that is more specifically what I was thinking we could have assistance with. Basically what we are looking for out of what we need to put into this bylaw here is something along the lines of a confidential disclosure framework that ICANN must abide to that will allow review teams to have access to a sufficient amount of documents in order to essentially complete their work. And there needs to be some form of a short statement on a standard that we need to put in there that if the review team feels that they're being restricted in access to a document that they feel they require, that we have some form of expedient, independent manner to have the confidentiality status of that document assessed. So it's more of a confidential disclosure framework that I would think we need to get some input on. Now, be that from ICANN or from their current status, or be that from Sidley on their experience in the area. So it's not necessarily the documents that I'd like input on. It would be the framework that an NDA would exist within that I think we should be looking at getting external input into. We could work this out ourselves if we had 6 months, 8 months to do it. You know, lots of companies have confidential disclosure frameworks, but we don't have that type of thing.
Thanks, James. I'm firmly of the view that what we need to do in this part of the bylaws is describe the problem and how we're going to solve it, not come up with the answer. Alan, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. On a small point, when it says a review team shall, it should be review teams or a subset thereof. There are cases where members of the review team choose not to want to have things disclosed to them. That's certainly happened already in the review team that I participated in. I really think it's an issue of if the review team gets something under non-disclosure that they feel they must be able to report on, and the non-disclosure is unreasonable, then they need to be able to escalate it. I agree with James. It doesn't have to be in the bylaws, but it must be in a framework documented somewhere. And escalation to the board, for instance, is a reasonable path. It's got to be somewhere outside of staff. And if there is something that ICANN is either refusing to disclose at all, or for that matter, you don't even know if there's a document to disclose, then again, escalation to the board. So I really don't think that we have a major issue here in terms of the standard of the decision. It's really what do you do if a decision is made that you don't like? And I think that can be covered relatively easily. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Greg.
Thanks, Greg Shatton. A couple of issues I see here. I think one is kind of the level of disclosure, or at least not over redacting or over holding things confidential. So I'm not sure that is to some extent goes to what are the criteria for documents to be considered confidential or not. Since the more documents that are released without confidentiality restrictions, the easier everything else gets. Then for those things which are still remain confidential, and the issue becomes not only drafting an appropriate NDA, but also determining to some extent how the information that is contained in the confidential documents can be used by the review team, since clearly this is being reviewed for purposes ultimately of a report that's going to be put out. So it's not just a question of who gets to see what, but also who gets to do what with what they've seen. So I think that needs to be kept in mind as we develop this. Thanks.
Thanks, Greg. Look, guys, we've had a good discussion on this, and Steve, do you have enough here to go on in terms of proposing an updated draft that briefly sort of sets out the kind of thing that we've been angling towards?
Yeah, so I think so. All along, it's a two-step disclosure question. We'll write it up as two steps, but it's not going to be it's not going to be good until legal gets their eyeballs on it this weekend.
Yeah, if you can just add, even if you can't do any more than add a couple of bullet points about what it is we're trying to achieve in the next 24 hours or so, then we can get legal to be looking at it over the weekend, and the lawyers have been on this call and now understand the issue in more depth. So I think we're going to pass that one back to you to do that. Thank you very much. Oh, hang on. Are there any other items in this paper, Steve, that need to be...
There are.
Okay.
But they're very quick.
Please go on.
Okay, they're very quick. So if you look at the very next one, the accountability and transparency review, this would be on top of page 4 of the document that's in the chat. One of the things we discussed on the Saturday in Paris is that at the top of two of these four reviews, there is a commitment. In addition to the commitment to do the review, there's a commitment on the part of ICANN. And so what I endeavored to do, which we promised on Saturday afternoon, was to see if the commitment were already reflected in the bylaws, and if it weren't, then the commitment is repeated here as part of the bylaws. But it is not automatically imported to the core values of the bylaws. Instead, it's just part of the commitments that are articulated in the reviews section of the bylaws. So the first one is the ATRT, the top of page 4. the second part of this sentence says that ICANN's commitment to maintain and improve robust mechanisms for public input, accountability, transparency, decision-making will reflect the public interest and be accountable. So I checked, and it is a commitment that would also become part of the bylaws under what's under the mission statement and core values. So this one's covered. If you go to the next one, and there are some hands up. Are they old hands or new?
Those are Alan's is a new hand.
Mine's new, but I'll wait till you speak until you finish talking.
Thank you, Alan. And if you jump to the second review, it's the Security, Stability, and Resiliency review, and this would be on page 5. I checked, and sure enough, security, stability, resiliency, and global interoperability are all part of the core values proposed by Work Party 2. So that one's covered. Let me go to number 3. 3 is a review of the new GTLD program. So here, instead of saying that this is being brought into the core values, it just stays here because it includes a commitment that becomes part of ICANN's bylaws regarding future expansions of the TLD space. So a question for clarification is that if the community pursued an IRP, does the standard of review include all of ICANN's bylaws, or does it just include the core values? Is there anyone who could give me an answer on that? More than likely, Holly would know. So while we're waiting for that answer, the implications are just to understand that if an IRP standard review is only the core values and mission statement, that would be a surprise to many of us in the CCWG. We had the view that an IRP looks at all of the bylaws, not just the core values and mission statement. And only one last point, Jordan, and it's on the fourth review, the directory services or who is review. And it includes a commitment, but it is not becoming part of the core values. That commitment is just here in the who is section. And keep in mind that any text in the review section of all four reviews is text that can be proposed for modification by the ATRT. So the very next Accountability Transparency Review Team, a year out, 2 years out, 3 years out, I don't know when it would convene, but part of its work is to examine the text in these four reviews, including the commitments, and it can propose changes to those commitments as part of the ATRT recommendation. That's all I've got on that. Go ahead, Jordan.
No, I was going to say go ahead, speaking list.
Okay, thank you. It's Alan speaking. I see you've added the word directory services. Have you addressed any of the other issues that Steve Crocker had raised about wording that was just plain wrong in the original one? And
Alan, the answer is no. This was discussed pretty extensively, and we just discussed that change could be made by the ATRT as part of its first review. As I just described, they're allowed to change these words. So by keeping them here instead of the core values, they're not subject to a fundamental bylaw review, and the ATRT has an easy access to them. If you recall, we wanted to be faithful to the promise of bringing the commitments over from the affirmation and not being accused of watering down those commitments just in the point of bringing them over.
Okay, thank you. I understand that discussion took place, and I understand it completely. I have two comments, though. First of all, the ATRT may not be staffed with people who are particularly competent on this issue. So that's number one. Number two, the next version of this report of this thing may well happen under these bylaws before the next ATRT is certainly before it's acted on. And lastly, I personally would like to see what changes he wanted specifically and see if they are watering down or if indeed perhaps clarifying. I can see some words in there which I don't like, and I'm not going to propose changes arbitrarily, but I'm not sure we should blindly refuse to look at them, and maybe he did send them and we looked at them and I forget that. But, you know, if we can...
Steve Crocker did identify the two paragraphs that he didn't want to keep, and they're the second and third paragraph on the table on page 7. I don't know whether he proposes eliminating them or throttling back what the obligations are, but please keep in mind at this lateness in the process, we will end up with a significant pushback.
All right. I just thought it would be fair game to ask what the word
and IP interests.
Yeah, I'll be quiet now.
Yeah, by all means. By all means, ask. Please do.
Sorry. All I was going to say is I would like to have seen on the table what he was proposing and then reject it as opposed to saying we don't want changes, but I will put my hand down now.
It's Jordan here. I agree with you in principle, Alan, but this is just another example in my view, something that would be a nice-to-have improvement. And this text has been around for ages. The fact that Steve hasn't liked it since 2009 has given him 6 years to propose improvements, and he hasn't done, so this isn't the time to do it.
Well, having done a review of the last Who Is process and all the angst and heartburn that went along with it, I personally would have preferred to see something fixed if we could fix it now. But as I said, I will resist.
Okay, Greg, your hand is up.
Thanks, Greg. I think this is definitely something that there's no longer, that there needs to be time to fix, and this is not the time. That's, of course, suggesting that it needs to be fixed, but even that dialogue needs to take place in a thoughtful manner. You know, the gist of the contribution from Steve was that it was inappropriate from the beginning and nonsense, to quote the word, use the words he used. So I don't think we're there yet in terms of thoughtful dialogue. So I think we should take that as a work stream too, or run that as a work stream too, as a with the timing that we've got here. You know, we've been talking about Who Is since the beginning of ICANN, and we'll talk about it till the end of ICANN, although it's going to get some next generation name, so maybe you'll have to stop saying Who Is, but What Is will be forever. Bye.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Greg. Steve, thank you for wandering us through, what does that mean? For taking us through this paper. You've had a reasonable amount of feedback and discussion, so do you have enough to be going on here?
We're good.
Okay. And Greg, that's an old hand from you? Yeah, thanks. Okay, thank you, everyone. We're going to chew on to the next agenda item, if we could, which is the removal of individual directors from the ICANN board. This paper has been... has been through the ringer a number of times. The version I think that we're looking at now is the composite version of the changes that Alan made, and then I built some additions into which were designed to make it more consistent with where I thought we got to on the model, and specifically that was visible on the second page, where I've tried to work in the petitioning process and tried to illustrate that the process is a quite common one, whether directors are nominated by SOs, ACs, or by the nominating committee, and where I've introduced the clear discussion within the ICANN community assembly before any power to remove the director is exercised, and included the agreement that we reached in Paris that there would be the development of standards that would apply to the removal power. So that's on the third page in paragraph 11. And then at the end of this is the table that Alan had had prepared and included in an earlier version of this paper. So there's a key outstanding decision here. There's been some discussion in Paris and on the list and so on about whether we allow for removal not to be a decision of the appointing body where an SOAC was appointing, but that it's only the community mechanism. There's an open question there about that, and we should try and resolve that if we can today, either eliminate it and leave it to the CCWG or recommend the CCWG that we present options. I'm definitively against the third one. Alan, you've also been working on this text. I'd invite you to take the floor and add some comments at this point.
Yeah, I'll make some comments, and thank you for putting in a lot of the stuff that was decided, but I didn't have access to my notes when I was doing this update, and I forgot a lot of them, so thank you for that. In terms of the decision that is the dark box in the middle of page one, unless this group feels it's empowered to eliminate the option right now, then I think the only option is number two. We got a very clear message from the co-chairs. They did not want to go out with questions and options to the community if we could avoid it. And ultimately, we have, you know, we've never had to take a vote of the members, but we could. And I think this is one that we need to decide before going out to the larger community on. That's a personal opinion. Everyone may not agree. I have personally some significant problems with some of the decisions that we made in Paris, and that is with regard to the work that we said we would do, and I think it's in this document, but I'm not 100% sure, that we would do in Workstream 2 on rationales for on what grounds could we remove directors and things like that. I see identifying specific grounds and as something which will virtually ensure that we'll never be able to remove a director, you know, short of them committing a legal offense or fraud or conflict of interest or something like that, that simply not acting according to the desire of the community by the judgment of the community as a whole is going to be very difficult to put as a specific rationale and is potentially something which they can appeal. And I really have worries about that. So I'm just going on record that I feel very uncomfortable with that, the kind of commitment we made to go ahead and try to define rationales and causes. Thank you.
Alan, the paragraph that refers to what you're discussing is paragraph number 11 at the top of page 3. And I'd urge you to just have a look at that while I keep gently meandering away. What I've tried to do there is to frame it that it's a development, a positive thing, a task to develop community standards that set out the expectations and that the community has of board members, and not suddenly turning that into an objective standard that is the only way to remove a board member through this power, because it's quite clear that in the end, in the legal framework we're working with, the rights of the member to remove board members cannot be legally constrained. So the question is, what are the procedures and norms and expectations that are developed? And so that's why I tried to word it the way I have. Does that alleviate your concern? So to restate it again, there wouldn't be any sort of list of criteria, and if the board member didn't fail them, they wouldn't be able to be removed.
To be blunt,
it's about expressing the norms and standards that are expectations of the community.
To be blunt, no. When you use words like breached, I don't know how, you know, I'll return to the expression I've used before. That is, in a marriage, you have the term irreconcilable differences. I don't know how you make that a breach. It's just that you're going in a different direction. And it happens in marriages, and I think it can happen in between the community and directors. If it couldn't, we wouldn't be talking about them, about removing them at all. But we are talking about it, and we're talking about it a lot. And I think it's because there's a general disconnect between what the community wants ICANN to go and where the directors, specific directors or all of them, are leading it. And I'm not sure one can phrase that as expectations or terms that go along with the word are breached. I may be unique in this, but I just don't see how we're going to do that. And if we're trying to ensure that we never remove directors, I think this is a dandy way of doing it. And that may not be a bad result. But anyway, I've said my piece.
Thanks, Alan. Let's do the speaking list. James, you're next.
Hi, James Gannon. So on the question, I'm very strongly under the belief that if the GNSO wishes to remove its director, it's up to the GNSO to remove its director. I believe we should eliminate the option. Again, it comes down to we need to respect the appointing organization's authority to either appoint or remove their own director. As to the second point, which we've been discussing on standards, I'm somewhat mixed. I think I agree that we shouldn't have specific standards that, if breached, that could be expected to lead to a petition for removal. I believe that I think the concept of having standards and community guidelines for board members is a good idea, but if we could remove the second half of that sentence and the expectations if breach could be would lead to a petition, I think a lot of us might be a lot happier with it.
Okay, thanks, James. Greg, next.
Thanks, Greg Shatton, for the record. I think this is a rat hole of the first order. I also think it's a bad idea. And it'll be a bad idea badly executed, or never executed if we turn to it. I think this should be discretionary. I think we should keep in mind that we are, by and large, dealing with reasonably mature organizations and people. We should also consider that, certainly for the GNSO, it's not always the easiest to find a board member to nominate. Our most recently nominated board member from the non-contracted parties house was the result of a fairly extensive process. And I think that the need to remove a director and clearly to replace him or her with another person found through that process is in itself enough to create the idea that this is something that's only going to be done in order to, in extremis. You know, you don't have to put barbed wire around a fire alarm to make sure that people don't pull it, except maybe if you're in a school for delinquents. And I don't think we're a school for delinquents. And I think that people realize the gravity of this tool, and we don't have to create some sort of checklist. Which is just, as I said at the beginning, going to be a complete rat hole of a project. Thanks.
Thanks, thanks, Greg. Tiana, you're next. Tiana, if you're speaking, we can't hear you. You're on mute.
Do you hear me now?
Yes, now we can hear you.
Okay, you hear me. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Tijani speaking. I have said that several times to Alan, but I will repeat it on the record. When you choose your wife, you choose it because you love her, because you have a feeling. It's your heart. When you appoint a director to the board, you do it because you think he's the best one to serve the community on the board. So it is absolutely different, and the mechanisms will not be the same, and they cannot be the same. This is the first point. Second point, I don't say that we need a checklist of causes or of reasons, but when the community will discuss in the forum or in the assembly, as you want to call it, they will discuss according to what? According to what we said in Paris, that we will define it in the work stream too, as the how to say the I don't know how we call it, but it is our expectation from the director. So the discussion will be, we have a reference. That's why we need it. It will not be a checklist. Perhaps we, something is not in those requirements or in those expectations that will perhaps motivate recalling. But if we want to raise everything, to put it as if you want to do it, you do it, and that's all. No, nothing more. I'm afraid I will object. Thank you.
Thanks, Tiani. I put myself on the speaking list, I think. So the development of kind of some community norms and expectations, I think, can only be helpful even if they have no binding relevance. Because as far as I'm aware, aside from what's in the bylaws, which is pretty thin, there hasn't been a recent community articulation of what we expect from our directors. And so having that developed, whatever it's standing, it may be a rat hole, it may not, but having the discussion about that as part of what Stream do, it seems to me, can do no harm. And the procedure that's set out in paragraph 6 on page 2 and subclause B, it renders the arguments about why someone wants to remove a director transparent, and it gives the person the right of reply. So I think those are two significant improvements. And I want to be really clear that there's the way that I tried to word paragraph 11 does not imply and should not be read to imply that there would be a decision role for these standards. So no one is suggesting, and the wording doesn't suggest or isn't intended to suggest, that there would be an imposition of these standards on the decisions. It would simply be another matter of a public standard which people could refer to and take into account. Okay, Alan, your hand is up.
Yeah, thank you. 2 points. First of all, to be clear, if we're going to remove a director, there will be reasons. And certainly if it's a NOMCOM director, where we're going to have to convince other ACs and SOs that they should agree, there's going to have to be a discussion, as Tijani said, and there will have to be reasons raised. My worry is that they become a test, and potentially a test that can be appealed. So if we go ahead with anything like this, I think there has to be a very clear and explicit statement that notwithstanding any rights that anyone has to go to an ombudsman or to go to a court or whatever, that they waive those rights and that this not be something that is subject to appeal. Now, that may be part of standard corporate law and regarding members, I don't know, but I think we need to make sure that it's well understood. Thank you.
Thanks, Alan. Tiani, your hand is up.
Thank you. We can make an article in the bylaw saying that it is not appealable. There is no appeal to this decision, to the decision of recalling a board member, so that Alan will not have this fear. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it'll be clear in whatever process is done that there won't be any appeal, because there's definitely the right to do this is not ambiguous. Look, I'd like to return us back to the first page here on paragraph 4, which is the bracketed text. And what we need to do is just get a sense of the room's view about whether we should either eliminate that option or leave it there in brackets for the CCWG to discuss. So let me restate that, because in a minute I'm going to ask you to use the tick and cross boxes on your Adobe room. So the tick will be if you want us to delete that bracketed text at the bottom of the first page. The cross will be if you want us to keep the bracketed text and have the discussion at the CCWG meeting. So remember, I'll do it a third time. If you could use a tick now to say you want to delete the bracketed text above the gray box at the bottom of page one, paragraph four. Tick to delete it and just give the one option of SOs and OCs being the people who can remove the directors they appointed. Put a cross if you don't want, if you want to leave the bracket in for the CCWG to discuss. So tick to remove, cross to leave it in for CCWG. Could you please apply your ticks or crosses now in the room? And we'll just get a sense of where the numbers are. So the tick is to delete the bracketed text, and the cross is to keep it in.
Jordan?
Tiani, yes?
Jordan?
Yep.
Yes, I will put my tick with the condition that we will not remove everything about the discussion, about the expectation of board directors, etc. Thank you.
Thanks, Tiani. There's a very clear majority of text there. So what we're going to do is remove that bracketed text. And those who have got crosses, you're welcome to raise this issue on the CCWG call. And I will mention that in my report back that we've removed that option. And we're going to move along. Thank you for those ticks. If you want to clear your hands, that would be good. We need to move along to the next agenda item. So I'd like to do that. But I see a hand up from Greg. Greg, please go ahead.
Yeah, just briefly, I'm not sure where we left ourselves on paragraph 11, and there's also a reference at the end of paragraph 3 to future work to develop standards to guide the use of this power. So I don't believe there should be such standards. So where are we on that language?
Well, I haven't got any proposals to change it in front of me.
Make a proposal.
So this is going to this paper will be on the agenda for the CCWG on the 23rd, and I think that. There was a consensus at the Paris meeting that we should include the standards thing in Workstream 2, but there was also a consensus that those standards should not be presented as in any way binding. So they're meant to be advisory or guidance. So the language can be cleaned up to reflect that. But other than that, I'd like to propose that I do that cleanup to make that clearer, and then we raise at the CCWG discussion of this the prospect that some people don't support including that reference, and we just take a vote or a consensus call in that forum. Are people happy to accept that proposal?
My proposal would be to take out 11, but we could do knots and crosses on that, too.
My concern with that is that, unlike the previous issue, there was an in-the-room view about it. So rather than deleting it, I'd rather flag it as an issue for the CCWG to discuss.
Well, maybe we can get it then.
And I would like to move on. Is that bearable for you, Greg?
It'll come up again.
Yeah. I don't doubt it. So can we just recap? Yes, in the action of lists, we're going to remove the back of the text on page one. Another action is for drafting to be clear that any standards developed in Workstream 2 would be advisory only, and the third action is to CCWG to discuss paragraph 11 and the reference in paragraph 3. Thanks, everyone. We've got exactly 23 minutes left on our call. We've got two substantive items left. Recall of the entire ICANN board and the ICANN budget. I just seen a bizarre... Oh, yes. Matthew Shear's point about the notes and page five, on item five, selecting life probably isn't quite something we want to have in our notes, Grace or Bernie. Yeah, thanks. So moving along to the recall of the entire ICANN board, I don't know if we've got time to work through this one properly. And that's because there was quite a lot of text introduced by the legal team to specify this in greater detail. And there you've got the marked up text in front of you with scroll control available. It seems to me that this does work out the model that we discussed in Paris, which was that the way to deal with the caretaker board issue was that if there was a petition and then a decision coming up to remove the directors, the appointing bodies would have to suggest replacement directors as part of the process. And there's a sea of red ink there and comments. Holly, do you want to give, because you were the drafter, I think, here, do you want to give us a 2-minute take on what's here?
Certainly. And it really is, in response, Jordan, to your request to put some flesh on the bones of how this would work. What it does is it provides for a petition to be sponsored by at least one SO and one AC, and that was in the already existing language. And then that a majority of the remaining, I think two-thirds of the all the SOs and ACs who participate in the community mechanism would need to support the petition, not meaning that they're necessarily in favor of it, but that they believe that it should be heard. Upon that, that notification going to, and it's in bracket, the corporate secretary would be a typical person you would send this kind of notice, to then give time for there to be greater notice to the community at large so that you could start the process of having a recall consideration. The notion here is that the assembly would have to have an opportunity for consultation and that there would be a vote called at some point, you suggested 7 days, after that consultation opportunity. And so there are some timing suggestions in here. They're just light suggestions as a means of showing you how that kind of process could work. The notion would also be that at the point of consultation, each SO and AC that has the ability to select a director would be bringing forward their candidate to be the replacement, the interim board, so that if you did go to a vote and the vote was successful in reaching the threshold for replacement, you'd automatically have an interim board that would kick into being at that moment or, you know, shortly thereafter. You could have an electoral inspection kind of process to have somebody validate the vote. But that's essentially the notion that this would be fairly automatic. We also included some language to remind everyone that currently your president serves on the board ex officio, meaning by reason of his or her title, and therefore this kind of recall of the entire board would not be a recall of your president, that the president is actually selected by the board. And so we just wanted to point that out, and that's why we had that language in there. So it's pretty straightforward. I know it looks like there's a lot of red ink, but we wanted to give you a flavor for how it could work. You may determine that you don't need this much detail in the proposal, and we leave that decision to you.
Thanks, Holly. We'll take a speaking list here, a brief one maybe. And my proposal is not that we sign this off, because it's the longest paper I think we've looked at today. It provides a workable model, but I think we can come back if people want to discuss it again in a future call, unless you tell me otherwise, unless you think this is okay to go as the preliminary draft text. James, your hand is up. Go ahead.
James, sorry, I'm kind of possibly jumping ahead in this document, because I have to run off in about 2 minutes and leave call early. There was a discussion in Paris that as part of Workstream 2, we may look at putting in some, I won't call them criteria, but some guiding principles for selection of the interim board members in a crisis situation, as we would need them to meet a certain level of knowledge of ICANN and the current situation that may be going on. I don't see any reference to it there. Maybe it just hasn't made it in yet, but I would like to see that put in, that as part of Workstream 2, we might look at some guiding principles for interim board member selection.
Thanks. That's well noted. It was discussed that we should have some specification of the sorts of requirements as guidance for the SOs and ACs as they choose. That's a fair point to note, James. What do people think? It's a complicated looking text, but the ideas that are set out in it are mainly procedural ones, rather than substantive changes to this board power. Are there any other speakers on this? I don't have a sense from the room or from the speakers or from the chat as to whether people are quiet because they're pretty happy with this, or because they want more time to read and think about it. So could we do a poll on that really slightly strange question? If you are being quiet because you're generally happy with the way this sets out, could you give us a green tick? And if what you want is more time to read and think about it, could you give us a red cross? Just a sense of the room, nothing more. Just want to see where we're at. I don't know what a running rabbit means. You can speed up. Yeah. Okay. More time to think is getting about as many crosses as ticks. So what we'll do is we will, I'll do a cut of this over the weekend that maybe sort of makes the language a little bit more digestible, and we will discuss this in our call on Tuesday. We don't have another call until then, so Tuesday it is. And it'll circulate it as a cleaned up doc. So Tuesday. Thank you. Right. Next item on the agenda is the budget, ICANN budget. Just note, team, those ticks and crosses on the recall of the entire board were just about whether people wanted more time. They weren't about whether we were approving it or not. So just make sure that's reflected in the notes. And the action point for that last item is for me to slightly clean up the doc and recirc for discussion on Tuesday. ICANN budget, Jonathan Zook and I have had a cut at this. You've got the version that doesn't have the gory red lines on it. Jonathan, over to you to briefly outline this.
Hey, folks. Thanks for staying up to the end of the call here. So this is revisions based on what was discussed in Paris. And so as you can see, I put here in the top of the document, some of the issues were raised. One was of the IANA budget and whether it be treated separately and if there should be different thresholds for voting, et cetera, for the IANA budget. The other had to do with round trips, and there appeared to be a rough consensus that two should be the maximum before an escalation to other accountability mechanisms should occur. And then that there should also be a time box for the veto. One of the points that Krista Spain raised in Paris is that the budget process is already quite long and that there isn't a lot of room to lengthen it. And so we need to keep this process efficient if possible. And then the other recommendation that came up is that the basis for the veto should be explicit. It should be consensus-based and driven by the public comments. So all those issues were addressed in this draft. Jordan and I just sort of took some shots at what some time limits might be on some of these things. The other issue that Jordan raised in Paris is, separating the thresholds associated with the strategic plan versus the budgets. We didn't discuss that a lot in Paris, but certainly the strategic plan is less time-sensitive than the budget, and so we specified some different time frames for the strategic plan than we have for the budget. So then the question is, for the group here, is what we've done provided sufficient protection for the IANA budget? Because that was the number one issue, is just making sure that IANA keeps going. Is 15 days enough for a veto and a turnaround by the community, given that the issues will have to be raised during the public comment period on the budget anyway? So let's see if it's this is the alternative method of showing a document where it's clean. And I wonder if I should open up my dirty version of this so I can find things as well. But you can see here in paragraph 3 is a new paragraph that the IANA budget or PTI budget in particular requires protection as recommended by the CWG on IANA transition. The IANA functions budget must be managed carefully and not decreased without public input regardless of the status of the other portions of the budget. So that's sort of a whereas-y sort of clause that was added specifically about IANA. Down here in paragraph 5, you can see that the ICANN general and PTI have been sort of split out to be approved or, subject to veto by the community. And the rest of that language is fairly similar. And then here in paragraph 6, I'm scrolling down up the bottom half of page 1 here. Given the issues that constitute the basis for a veto will have been raised during the community consultation that leads to a plan or budget being considered by the board, a period of 15 days following a successful petition by an SRAC to raise the question is sufficient for the community to decide to veto a budget or operating plan. Because time pressures are less acute in respect to strategic plans, a period of 30 days can be allowed for a strategic plan. So you can see that that's a text that gets pretty specific about the turnaround time. Paragraph 7 as well, to allow the board sufficient time to absorb and veto the process, a 40-day minimum should be added to the budget operating planning process. So that's the overall planning process schedule that assumes a veto just for safety's sake and minimizing the impact of a vetoed budget on the consequent year. And then again, 60 days is added to the process for a strategic plan. Most of this language was changed in Paris. Paragraph 11 here at the top of page 2, the board will have a limited time, 40 days, to resolve the situation of not operating with an approved budget by considering the community's feedback and proposing a revised budget. If the board is unable or unwilling to do so, other community powers, such as set out in this part of the public comment report, are available if the community wanted to take the matter further. The community would be limited to 2 rejections of budgets or operating plans per cycle before resorting to other accountability mechanisms in order to avoid ongoing use of the previous year's budget. Because of the longer-term nature of the strategic plan, there would be no limit on the number of rejections allowed.
Jonathan, we don't have time to be reading the proposal at this point.
Yeah, okay.
So,
sorry about that. Go ahead.
I think you've highlighted the
difference.
Those were both new content. So it's the change to the fact that there's a limit on the number of returns. There's the clarification around the petitioning process and the timeframes involved, and so on. The marked-up version of this was circulated, so people hopefully have had a chance to read that. So really, I'd ask for any comments here. Sorry to cut you off, John. We're just running out of time.
That's okay. We also made different voting thresholds between the IANA budget and the regular budget. That's worth drawing attention to in paragraph 18.
It is. And on that, we're seeking feedback from the CWG on that, and we haven't got it quite back yet. So that may be something we need to also finalize next Tuesday. Steve, your hand is up.
Thank you. Yeah, the first is on paragraph 18 on page 3. The three-quarters level of support would allow one of the four ACSOs, if we have four, to, it would take more than one. If you're right at three-quarters, then we're saying it takes at least two ACs and SOs to do that. But I'm wondering whether this language needs to reflect the fact that it's a percentage as well as saying that it is at least two. Since some of the fractional voting could get you to 75% without two. So is there an intent to try to standardize and make it consistent all the community powers when it comes to the three-quarter level of support requiring at least two ACs and SOs?
That's a good question that I don't have a good answer to off the top of my head. But I think we will get a table, I think, that Bernie is doing that does put, based on latest drafts, the thresholds all beside each other. And that will help us see the relativities between them. And along with the modeling work he's doing with the numbers, will let us have an informed discussion about the thresholds. And I think, though I might be wrong, that that's scheduled for discussion either at the meeting tomorrow, the CCWG, or next week.
Thank you. I have one other comment, which is the placing of a two-time limit on rejecting the budget. As I recall, most of our debate was whether or not we had this 10% penalties built in, and I believe the CCWG is not in support of that, and the draft reflects that. But why did we retain this notion of you only get two rejections, and what happens after the second rejection? I realize we can pursue other actions like IRP or spill the board, but does the board get its budget after the second rejection, or do they only get last year's budget? Thank you.
Jonathan, do you want to respond to that?
Sure. I mean, we did discuss this to some extent in Paris, and I think the expectation is that they get last year's budget, but that in fact, there seemed to be a real pressure in Paris not to simply allow that to be the outcome. And so and this is a change that Jordan made that I didn't even notice, but should the community want to pursue other mechanisms, I guess it makes this more conditional. My intention in the draft was to make it the case that after two that there would be an escalation to other accountability mechanisms. Not just everyone just being relaxed with the previous year's budget. So, I mean, I think that maybe became less clear with some language that said, you know, should the community wish to do so or something like that. But I think the bottom line is if the community and the board disagree, then it's up to the community to escalate at that point and not simply to let it sit with last year's budget.
But in no case do they get their proposed budget after the second rejection.
That's exactly right.
Thank you. Great. Thank
so the, I think that I the mean, way that the report is worded at the moment, I think the way the report is worded at the moment doesn't quite reflect that. If the answer is that after two rejections they get last year's budget minus 10%, that isn't here in this report.
No, we all universally seem to agree in Paris that we didn't want to do any budget reductions. So the only way to force the issue is through escalation and not through an alternative budget. There seemed to be consensus in Paris that we didn't want the board to just rest on the previous year's budget, that was by definition a temporary fix. So I think this is meant to be more strongly worded than that.
So Jonathan, it's not strongly as much as clear. To make it clear that after the second rejection, it's last year's budget that they're living with while we are pursuing other means.
I'll clarify that in the next draft.
Except that introduces a problem, because what if those other means don't lead to anything? Is the board entitled to propose a third go at the budget, and then what happens if people aren't clear? So my assumption has been that if on a second rejection, it is the newly proposed budget, the third draft, that does take effect. And remember, this will already be 120 days into the financial year by this point, and that the community is using other means to change the board and change the budget if required.
Jordan, I don't recall that at all, because that lets the board outlast us and get the budget they want. I don't believe that's the reflection of what the group wanted. They have to live with last year's budget. They don't get their proposal.
Right. Well, we're not going to have time to resolve that in the next 2 minutes. So I don't quite know what we do with that one, folks. I think the action is for me to have a discussion with staff and Steve and Jonathan and just highlight any options or ways to deal with this and get a clear statement out on the email list as quickly as we can, and to encourage people to discuss it on the email list and see if we can come to a quick agreement about what it should look like over the next couple of days, and to finalize that at our meeting on Tuesday. Quick call with Alan and Greg, and then we'll close the call.
Thank you very much. Just a quick comment that actually applies to a lot of the sections. When we say a petition is made by two SOs, two ACs and SOs, I'm assuming that all it takes is a majority of the ACSO to decide to do that. But we need to be,
correct.
We need to be clear about that, because I don't think we mentioned that anywhere. Even though the ultimate threshold may be 66 or 75, decisions to petition, I believe, are just majority ones. So we need to be
yes.
clear about that somewhere.
Yes. That's the number that we've been thinking about, and yes, it does need to be clear either individually within each power or in the header sort of comment on all the community powers. So, Grace, could you note that in the notes as well, clarity around the petitioning majorities within the NESO or AC, either here or in the header material for the community powers? Thank you. Thank you, everyone. This has been an intense call and a good one. We've managed to get through more of the substantive content than I hoped we would, which is really good, because it's a good basis for going forward on. On the last two agenda items, we are a little bit ahead of the game because we got through so much today. I will circulate a first draft agenda for the meeting on Tuesday, on Saturday, after the CCWG call. It'll be my Saturday. It'll be your Friday in North America. And flicking back to item number 8, if you've got any other things you think we need to sort out, any other bits of work that need to be done, please send your suggestions ASAP, if you notice any gaps, either to the email list or to me directly. That would be very helpful, and then we can work out how to deal with any gaps that you've noticed. And thank you for a long, intense, and successful call, and I'll speak to you all soon. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, guys.